Steve Van Rokel has decided to move out of the federal chief information officer's job. He'll be taking on a more operational role for the U.S. Agency for International Development. Now, that decision caught a lot of people by surprise. He's been CIO for 3 years. Some who know him think Van Rokel was attracted to the challenge of fighting the Ebola virus. They don't think he was necessarily looking for a change. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller writes about Van Rokel's legacy in his biweekly feature Inside the Reporter's Notebook. Jason joins me now with details on what some are saying about Van Rokel's impact on federal technology. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
So that was kind of a bombshell. We talked about it on Friday, actually, when it happened. And so now Van Rokel, I guess, is out of there. And so did anyone see this coming?
You know, the people I talked to, and I spoke with about four or five different people, both inside and out of government, and I'll tell you, nobody really saw this coming. And it was a little bit of a, oh, okay, versus wow. You know what I mean? It was very similar to, if you remember back, Tom, Dee Lee, remember her? She was the Office of Federal Procurement Policy Administrator back under the Clinton administration.
I do. She drove a Miata.
Okay, I didn't know that about her.
That detail about her, I do, though. Sure. Great lady.
She was at OFPP for several years. Then all of a sudden she moved over to DOD and became the head of defense acquisition policy, a career position. So you go, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. End of administration. She's taking a career job. Well, Steve Van Rokel is doing something in the same vein, though it's not a career job per se, but it's really going back to his roots, which is, you know, he worked at USAID. He was very operational. He helped out USAID during a 2011 crisis that happened in Africa. So he has some background there. And, you know, the whole time he's been at the CIO of the federal government, in many regards, open data was such a big priority for him, for the administration. In a lot of ways, this just makes sense for him to step back into that role. And let's be honest, Tom, 3 years at OMB, you know, I've been told it's the best job people ever, it's the hardest, best job, most demanding job they'll ever love. But 3 years is a long time at OMB.
Yeah, it's kind of like stepping into a meat grinder every morning, you know, and people can only take that so long.
And I think the hours you work, the pressure you're under, the expectations you have, I mean, that, not saying that other agencies don't have similar pressures, but for whatever reason, OMB seems to hold that. You know, when you talk to former OMB people, whether it's, you know, Tim Young or Karen Evans, who, you know, served under the last administration, or even going back to someone like Al Berman, who was OFPP administrator in the early 90s, they'll tell you it's a tough job. It's a great job, but it's a tough job.
All right. So what will Van Rokel, do you think, be remembered for most when we talk about federal IT in the years ahead?
I think the two things that I heard most from the people I spoke with was portfolio stat and digital government. Now, let me start with portfolio stat. Now, that's the concept of, you know, built on all the different stats, the tech stats, the act stats, the cyber stats. But this one really brought in the business people. This really brought in the program people. How are the programs investing in IT? Where is their duplication around, whether program areas or business areas? And can that duplication be reduced, be stopped, be combined? You know, that kind of led the push to shared services. So really what Steve, that idea of portfolio stat really is really going to be part of his legacy. The second piece is around digital services, and I'll start with the mobile strategy that they put out, the digital strategy they put out about 2 years ago now, and then we have to look at just in the last month the launch of the digital services group and everything that has happened in between. You know, if you remember, Tom, Vivek Kundra was the first one to come up with BYOD in government. And I think Steve really is making that more of a reality, taking not just what Vivek said, but really putting his own imprint on the idea of offering federal services to the citizen, to the business, where they want it, when they want it, how they want it. Every CIO I speak with tells me, oh, we're doing this with mobile. We've launched this many iPads or this many tablet computers. You really do see the impact.
And I wondered, as a side question, when Van Rokel did announce that U.S. digital service, I think they call it, it seems like it does the same thing at a somewhat smaller scale as the 18F group over at GSA does. GSA is claiming it's got 60 designers and rapid, you know, agile programmers and so forth. So do you think those two are going to merge eventually, or will they just work in parallel and nod hello to each other?
Well, in fact, one builds off the other. And this was an idea. This question actually came up last Friday at the President's Management Advisory Business Committee meeting, which is, you know, they bring in private sector CEOs and other executives to kind of give government some advice. And the way Mikey Dickerson, who's leading the U.S. Digital Services Group, described is, he goes, puts out fires. 18F and others, they help look at the future. Where is the future going? What capabilities are needed, you know, that aren't already there? Well, he's saying, what problems already exist and how can I go fix those problems? So they're not duplicative. And in fact, they work together. You know, he may fix a problem at agency X and then bring that idea over to 18F and say, hey, the rest of the government has a similar problem. How could you fix that problem? So in many ways, they are working together.
And is the digital service fleshed out yet? Are all 20, 25 people in place? And will they be coming from outside, or are they going to pick from within government?
So it's unclear about how many people. You know, they wrote that blog item about a month ago now, and they outlined who's going to join the group. So it's hard to say if there's all 20, 25 people are in there and what they're doing. I know they worked on three pilots, and they're also waiting on 2015 budget. So I think it's supposed to be a slow start, kind of so they call it a pilot phase. So I don't think it'll be fully operational until the Congress decides to fund it, and then after that, you know, 6 months or so to hire people, get them in.
And Mikey is the guy that wears the plaid shirts in the White House, huh?
he's the your more typical Silicon Valley guy versus the white shirt, blue tie, you know, brown jacket type.
All right, we're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller. So getting back to your column into Van Roekel, the experts you spoke with around town, how do they rank Van Roekel with the other famous people that held that job, Vivek Kundra, Karen Evans, Mark Forman?
You're right. I mean, each person brought something different. I mean, if you really want to go back to Mark Forman, who was a visionary, he put the government down a specific path. Karen Evans was an implementer to start with and then really came up with her own vision around cybersecurity. You know, Vivek was someone who really looked at cloud computing and really made that the reality in government. I mean, people, I think, are going to underestimate Vivek Kundra. Steve's legacy will be strong, as I said, in those two areas, portfolio stat, digital services. But I think he's going to, if you will, rank behind the other three former eGov administrators, federal CIOs. And I think the reason why is twofold. One former CIO who requested anonymity told me part of the reason is he never seemed to have a grand vision, a grand strategy of where the government can go to transform. It was more pieces and parts. You know, portfolio stat was a great idea of how to get investment control, investments in IT under control. You know, digital services was a piece of it, but what was the broader vision? And I think also Steve very much was a quiet guy who's behind the scenes. You know, when I saw him at speaking at events, he was always very good. You know, he's a great speaker, but he rarely took questions from the audience, and then he rarely kind of hung around to talk to reporters afterwards. So I don't know if he was shy, if it was just bad timing. It's hard to say why he did that, but those things matter in terms of the overall how you're looked at. Now, you know, in 5 or 7 years' time, you and I may be having this conversation about the, you know, 3 or 4 eGov administrators down the line there and really speak differently about Steve Van Roekel. But here early on, I'd say good legacy, not better than the other three who've served before him.
And do you think that possibly Van Roekel might have been dinged a little bit because of being the proponent of the portfolio stat and this constant look at the troubled projects? Somehow healthcare.gov got by everybody, and when it launched, people were saying, where the heck were all these experts, him and Todd Park, too?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that, you know, one of the things that really turned some people off that I've talked to within government was that healthcare.gov hearing back in, I think it was November, December timeframe, really the first big one around the security, the technology of healthcare.gov. And really all four people at the witness table kind of, you know, did one of these, pointed at each other and said, not me, it must be him. And I think that the CIOs looked at that and said, ooh, that, you know, the White House didn't give me any cover. They didn't give Frank Bateman or HHS or CMS any cover. They're probably not going to give me any cover. Maybe I shouldn't really go out on a limb for anybody until, you know, I get some confidence that I'm going to, you know, if I take a risk and it turns out not to be successful, that somebody's going to step up and go, hey, that's a great risk. We wanted them to take it. It didn't work out, but that's okay. I think that's part of that frustration. I definitely think healthcare.gov, you know, goes on his watch, Steve's watch, and as I think you're right, Todd Park's watch.
Now, you've also written in your column, there's a lot of people have left OMB in the IT shop, so there's kind of some turmoil there.
Well, I would agree. Now, the latest one is Scott Renda. Now, he's been at OMB for about 5 years. He was a policy analyst, and he actually, you know, according to my sources, say he moved to Seattle to join Amazon Web Services, working on specific projects. Now, Renda was at OMB, as again, for 5 years. He worked on initiative ranging from portfolio stat to implementing the open data executive order to really working on policy and implementation of cloud computing and data center consolidation. But he actually becomes the third policy analyst to leave OMB since January. If you remember, Tom, we reported Dominic Sale went on detail to GSA. He's
yes.
still over at GSA. And then Haley Van Dyke also had announced she was leaving OMB and then ended up coming back and working at the Digital Services Group, but she still left that policy analyst role, which, again, people don't realize OMB, the eGov office, has all of about five people in it or seven people. It's a very, very small office. They're supposed to oversee all IT and government, all pieces and parts of IT. People forget how critical those jobs are and those people are. Now, this is not to say there aren't great people who have followed on detail. I've been told, you know, a couple people that have gone over there. But at the same time, you had a lot of experience that walked out the door. And that's gonna hurt any organization, whether it's OMB or whether it's Federal News Radio or whether it's, you know, the Washington Nationals. When you lose talent like that, there's a time it takes to kind of rebuild it. So, you know, Scott Renda was maybe not a big surprise that he left, but he definitely was one of those behind the scenes people that played a big role.
And Jason, just briefly, one other item in your column I wanted to ask you to talk about briefly. The GSA is an Ability One, and lawmakers are looking at that program and want to make sure that it is what it says it is.
Right. I think this is the first, you know, a big example of Congress getting involved around strategic sourcing. Now, if you're not familiar with Ability One, they support about 50,000 individuals who are blind, who have other significant disabilities, and they provide manufacturing and services, and they work specifically for the government, but I'm sure they do some commercial work. But the government is required to buy Ability One products and services first. So if there's Ability One provides it, you have to go there. It's a mandatory source. And what 50 congressmen wrote to both senators and House members, Democrats and Republicans, wrote to GSA saying, we want more, we want assurances that you're complying with Ability One, because we're starting to see some concerns and some examples specifically around office supplies and the Office Supplies 3 that you're not doing that. Now, GSA posted a blog from Bill Sisk, who is the deputy administrator over at the Federal Acquisition Service, and he reiterated, yes, they support it. Yes, the money, there's a higher percentage of dollars going to Ability One this year than in previous years. So they are saying we are doing everything we can to support it. But I think this is the first, you know, shot across the bow, if you will, around strategic sourcing. I would keep your eyes open that over the next, you know, 6 months, 8 months, even year, there are going to be a lot more congressional interest in this idea of strategic sourcing, not just Ability One, but more broader.
All right. Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. Great speaking with you.
Thank you, Tom.